The next case is United States v. Honey. Is the appellant ready to argue? The government? Appellant may argue.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Brian Miser. With me at council table is Major Select Encarnacion Miranda, and together we represent Captain Bobby Honey. Chief Judge Stuckey, with your permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Judges, the government has known since the inception of this case that it could not prove the charged offense. Indeed, it made a slipshod attempt to amend the charging specification before trial, and that was objected to by the defense. It was not until 4 days before oral argument below that the government for the first time advanced the novel argument that Captain Honey had been convicted of anything other than the charge and specification referred to his court-martial by the convening authority and ultimately approved by the convening authority. Now, I will discuss the Re-603 issue in a brief moment, but I would submit that perhaps the easiest way to resolve this case is pursuant to United States versus Walters, and that is, put another way, to say that the United States and its attempt to evade having its case dismissed on factual sufficiency grounds below injected fatal Walters error at the CCA. And you can see that at the joint appendix at page 9, where the court in its decision says, we must first determine the specific offense appellant was convicted of before we can determine whether that offense was legally and factually sufficient. In doing so, we must determine with specificity what touching constituted bodily harm as alleged in the greater offense. And that's precisely what Walter said the CCA, and specifically the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, could not do. Now, this court can dismiss it on Walters, but it could also dismiss it on the basis of the Re-603 issue that is before the court.
Before we explore Walters.
Yes, Your Honor.
Tell me why this isn't waived.
Which issue is waived, Judge?
Why the LIO issue isn't waived. The military judge asked him not once, but twice, if it's the LIO, if it's an LIO. They both said, yes, sir, yes, sir, three bags full.
With respect, Judge, I would respectfully disagree that that's an accurate recitation of the record.
Okay, what does the record say to you?
What the second military judge said
The second judge said,
did the first military judge dismiss the greater offense and allow this case to go to trial on the LIO of 128? There was never a concession by the defense here that that's a valid lesser-included offense. It was just an acknowledgement of the state of the game at that point. And the government is, frankly, overselling what actually took place in the record of trial. And so with respect to waiver on the LIO, the Riggins issue, the second issue, Judge, what we're dealing with is unsettled law at the time of the appeal, which has already been resolved in the Oliver case this past term. With respect to the 603 issue, though, this allegation that Captain Honey touched Captain RVS's vulva pelvic region is not fairly included in the allegation that was charged at trial that he touched her vulva. This was again acknowledged by the Article 32 officer, whose advice proves prescient in many ways in this case, where the Article 32 officer said that if you're going to do this change, he also recommends that this case not even be referred to trial. But primarily he recommends that if you're going to change this to pelvic region, that this would constitute a major change and would require a referral anew. It was also conceded by the appellate government division at oral argument below. Again, when they advanced this argument 4 days before oral argument, they then, at oral argument, concede that changing vulva to pelvic region would in fact have been a major change. That's reflected at Joint Appendix at 238. Where in something that the court, the Air Force CCA permits, called a memorandum of argument, a week after trial, the government retracted its concession that this was a major change and adopted the position that ultimately was adopted by the CCA, that this was a minor change, changing vulva to pelvic region.
As Counsel,
noted, yes, Judge.
Going back to the ruling of the first military judge, what was the body part that was the object of the charge after the ruling of the first military judge?
Vulva, Judge. That's an appellate exhibit 56.
And at what point was it changed to a different body part?
Judge, the defense admits it was never changed to a different body part. And that was the position of the defense. It was the position of the prosecutor in the results of trial. It was the position of the convening authority in the promulgating order. And again, it was not until 4 days before oral argument below that we ever heard word one about this this purported change that, that occurred. And so the charge has at all times been vulva. And ultimately, that's the argument that we sought to make at the CCA, was that the evidence was factually insufficient for that. That's something that the government conceded at trial, is that they hadn't proved vulva. You'll see that, and I don't mean to interrupt you, Judge. You'll see that at the joint appendix at page 135, where the government, in its closing argument, is actually discussing the evidence. And they say, alluding to the Gospel of Matthew, that the mind was willing, but the body isn't able. They then go on to say that Captain Honey didn't touch Captain RVS's vulva, but it wasn't for lack of trying. And so I think this is very similar, if I can skip very briefly to the prejudice prong under Riggins, to the issue that you had in Humphreys, where you have a throwaway charge here that the government isn't even concerned with. What they're aiming for here is the greater specifications, the greater offenses under specification one and two of charge one, which are the attempts for the other 120 offenses. They're conceding this 128 offense and trying to get a conviction on those charges.
Counsel, in terms of the charge of which the appellant was convicted, aside from the issue of whether there was a major change or not, what is the legal sufficiency, the legal impact of a change in the body part here? Why is that significant?
Well, Judge, because it was a very valid defense, and that's fully articulated in the defense objection to the major change that occurs, Joint Appendix 185. So this isn't something that just transpires on the record, but there's actually a motion filed saying that this would be a major change. Again, that's the conclusion of the 32 officer.
But if there's an assault consummated by a battery, why is it of any legal significance as to which particular part in that region of the body is charged and then convicted? Why can't there be a change even in the findings that may be approved by the appellate court? What is there in this case that makes the change in the body part legally significant?
Because it was a valid defense, and a defense that Captain Honey pursued, that there may have been some incidental touching during this consensual encounter at this co-worker's home, but that specific touching hadn't occurred. And the government was on notice from the Article 32 investigating report that there were flaws in the government case. And the government, Your Honor, decided to proceed ahead at flank speed with the prosecution, fully
so knowing. Where did the defense say that touching of the pelvic region was not an offense, or that there was a defense to touching in the pelvic region?
Judge, I believe it's in the litigation, the motion that is at Joint Appendix 185. There's about a dozen pages in the record of trial that are cited in our pleading, and ultimately the government concedes when the military judge will not allow the amendment, that the parties are now proceeding to trial, and that Captain Honey is on notice that he is to defend against the allegation that he touched Captain RVS's vulva.
Right, but in the litigation beforehand wasn't it primarily focusing on a greater charge and not on assault consummated by a battery?
It was.
So when we're at the stage of dealing with assault consummated by the battery, what is the legal significance of a change in the body part that was touched?
Well, Judge, I believe it would be a major change under 603 and under Reese. That's the legal significance. It was a valid defense for Captain Honey to come in and say, I may have touched her, but I didn't touch her there.
But building on Senior Judge Efron's point, if you had a situation where someone said they touched manually somebody's vulva, as compared to touch manually someone's midriff, isn't that very different from saying you're touching, the male is touching the female's body with his penis in either the vulva or the pelvic region?
Well, Judge, I believe under 120, if this had been charged as a cause contact, perhaps, But the government was on notice, and more importantly, Captain Honey was on notice as to what he had to defend against, which was something that the government always knew it could not prove, that Captain Honey touched Captain RVS's vulva. The government could have...
The issue that was being raised by Senior Judge Efron is, it's a change, yes, but what leads it to be a major change rather than a minor change when the instrumentality, the penis, is the same, and the defense is that it was consensual hookup, and the pelvic region is still a very small region of the body that incorporates the vulva.
Well, Judge, I think I would respectfully disagree that the defense was that it was a consensual hookup. That's how they got into the room. The defense was that it was anatomically impossible, the charged offense, and that gets to the prejudice under the major change that occurred here. Ultimately, the defense on page 873 and 74 of the record of trial talks about how Captain RVS' initial allegation is that Captain Honey assaulted her from behind. Her next allegation is that she does it from the front. Her legs are closed. Captain Honey, during the 10 seconds that she can recall, is thrusting a flaccid penis somewhere on her front. The government chose to charge that as vulva, and Reese says that the government can be held accountable for the charging decisions that the government makes. Here, under these facts, and on this case, changing vulva to pelvic region is a major change and is done to the prejudice of Captain Honey.
Aren't there a whole string of cases, at least at the CCA level, that deal with assaults in which one part of the body is charged and then the conviction is sustained when the proof is of another part of the body, unless there is some import to the change? That is, let's ask the question another way. What in the record shows that the defendant, in this case, the appellant in this case, was defending on the grounds that it was not the pelvic region?
Well, Judge, his defense was it wasn't the vulva.
But what would show, but he was convicted then of the pelvic region?
What would show that he was convicted of the pelvic region?
Yeah. And what would show that the defense had any concern about the difference between the two once, let's assume that the change was made, at some point, to dealing with only the vulva, and what would show that the defense was concerned at all about whether it's the pelvic region or the vulva?
Well, Judge, I think it is the litigation before trial, Joint Appendix 185, which is the motion that objecting to the major change pursuant to 603. It's fully preserved.
But wasn't that all directed towards the greater charge?
Yes, Judge.
At what point was it directed to assault consummated by a battery?
It was, Judge, I think that's a distinction without a difference here. The defense was complaining that they weren't on notice, that it was too late in the game for the government to say, well, now you're defending against pelvic region. They had been on notice since the investigating officer's 32 report that there were problems with the case. And
could he have been convicted of the greater offense if it was only the pelvic region?
No, Your Honor, because it would have been dismissed for failure to state an offense.
That's why that was significant as to the greater offense.
With respect to the sexual contact, Judge, and there is one other minor point that I need to make here with respect to that greater offense, is this charge is only before this court-martial because essentially of a Scrivener's error. The Article 34 advice in this case said the pelvic region was to be removed entirely from this specification. Whoever amended the charge of specification actually only took one reference to pelvic region out of the specification, left the other. But the military judge concluded in allowing the case to go forward under Article 128 that the defense was on notice, that they were defending against the allegation that Captain Honey touched Captain RVS's vulva. That's how they proceeded to trial. And ultimately, that's how Captain Honey should have prevailed at the lower court. And it was only when the appellate government division had to defend the factual sufficiency, again with that concession that I've already alluded to, that Captain Honey never touched Captain RVS's vulva, that we come up with this new theory that somehow there's been a major change and that it was done at the suggestion of the defendant.
Mr. Miser, that seems to be one of the more confusing parts of at least from my perspective, this whole episode where the military judge asked the defense counsel to provide a new drafted specification, what in the world is going on there?
Well, Judge, I think that you should make of it what the appellate government division made of it in its brief at the lower court, which is absolutely nothing. I think when you read that as an appellate defense counsel, you can say that this is part of an aborted plea. I think that that's what you can assume at RCM 910. Remember where we are at the record of trial at page 805. It's the close of the defense case. You've heard the issues that we've talked about with Captain RVS. But there was a second accuser in this case, Captain Honey's ex-wife. And she had a number of issues. She had been called by OSI, asked if there was if Captain Honey had ever assaulted her. She said no. Several weeks later, she comes back and says, well, actually, there were three times. And one more point on that. At page record 454, and this is not under seal, his ex-wife testifies that she's experiencing auditory hallucinations of a little girl and seeing visual hallucinations of a tarantula. And I mean not to make light of that whatsoever, but you can see why at the conclusion of the defense's case, the government may have been in the mood to make a deal and to take a conviction on anything in this case. And that may be ultimately, again, speculating what happens here, but you're not to make anything of it at this level, and certainly nothing that the government makes of it, that the defense somehow cites or the military judge cites an irrelevant rule for court-martial, directs the defense to draft a specification for a plea that never comes, and that somehow constitutes a major change done to the prejudice of
is that what was going on? Because it sounded like the military judge, for under what authority, I don't know, but was asking the defense counsel to now draft a specification to which he could be found guilty during the trial.
Perhaps, Judge, and we're left to speculate, but the rule that he invokes is 910, and that's a plea that never comes. Of course, there should have been under 910 a plea colloquy with Captain Honey. There's not even a peep from the defense counsel as to what is purportedly taking place here, much less a colloquy with Captain Honey.
Right. I think a lot of this took place in an 802 conference, but it sounded, as I read through it, that for some odd reason, the military judge was reading 910 as simply the word please or plea to include not guilty as well as guilty pleas.
Chief Justice Duke, may I answer the judge's question?
Go ahead.
Judge, I think that there's an incredibly small chance because it would presume that the military judge does not know the law. He's a lieutenant colonel, perhaps a new military judge here. I think that you could read the analysis to 910 Alpha 1 just as you've suggested, and that somehow this...
Well, I don't think I would, but I wonder if the military judge...
And perhaps, Judge, and I think that loops us back to the Walters issue. Because if my colleague rises here in a few moments and says that, in fact, Captain Honey was convicted of pelvic region, then you have ambiguous findings, we'll never know the factual basis, and you have the double jeopardy concerns.
Well, on that same note, though, couldn't the military judge have simply, if there was a different finding than what was before the court on the charge sheet, shouldn't he have used exceptions and substitutions?
He could have, Judge, and I think you'd run into the same problems that we have with the major-minor change. I'm thinking of the Defoe case from 2003 before this court. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. Counsel for government.
May it please the Court. I am Major Tyler Musselman, and with me is Ms. Mary Ellen Payne, and together we represent the United States in this proceeding. During his court-martial, appellant affirmatively recognized assault consummated by a battery was a lesser-included offense. He voluntarily included the term pelvic region when drafting the specification at issue, and throughout his court-martial focused his trial strategy on the issue of consent. As AFCA correctly determined, neither the legal principles pertaining to major changes nor lesser-included offenses entitle appellant to relief from a conviction resulting from a specification that he drafted and supplied to the military judge at trial.
What's he supposed to do? I mean, it seems like he acquiesced to a direction by the military judge to do something. What's he supposed to do? I'm just saying I wouldn't make much of the fact that he did what the military judge told him to do.
Well, Your Honor, I think when you look at the record, the military judge informed or advised the parties to refer to RCM 910.
I mean, even the CCA said, at most, appellant merely acquiesced without concession or discussion to the military judge's insistence that the assault consummated by a battery offense remained.
And Your Honor, I would point to the military judge's summation of the 802 when she suggested the parties, he informed or advised them to look to RCM 910. I think the important point for the major or minor changes, at no point did the military judge inform the defense counsel as to the content of the specification. In other words, it was the defense counsel that came with pelvic region. And there is no indication in the record that the judge directed him one way or the other. And when you look at the language informed or advised, that's even farther from reality, I think.
I guess I still don't understand why this is even going on at the trial. I don't get it. We're at the end of the findings. Why is the judge asking the defense counsel to come up with a draft specification? I have missed something, I must admit, but I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
And I think this is
please
important.
Answer.
And I think this is an important point. What you had is you had a prior military judge dismiss the greater offense for failure to state an offense, and then you were left with the LIO. And so the military judge, and it's in the record, and he explains why he did this, was to clarify the record.
I understand that.
And so when you look at Rule 910A1, the discussion.
Usually doesn't the military judge do it or ask the government to do it?
Yeah.
I think, Your Honor, he was looking at RCM 910A1, the discussion. And it says when
why did he happen to focus on, what does the record tell us?
And that's
happened to focus on 910 in a case, at least which it appears from the record, was contested throughout?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think when you look at the actual discussion section of 910, you could see why the military judge would read it this way, because what you had in this case was a plea to a lesser-included offense. Now, a not guilty plea, I will agree, and I think this is kind of where the confusion arises, is typically you would think this would occur in when an appellant would plead guilty to a lesser-included offense. Here we have not guilty, but when you look at the discussion section, it doesn't distinguish one way or the other.
So did the judge err in referring to 910? I'm not asking you to concede whether it's a prejudicial error or not, but there was any basis in law for relying on 910 in this case?
I think, Your Honor, I think the discussion section can be read to support what the military judge in this case did.
The discussion has what binding effect on anything?
Well, I think the discussion section is important when you're interpreting the rule. It's not the analysis section, but the discussion itself that is in
the rule. Isn't the rule talking about guilty pleas?
Well, Your Honor, like I said, I think the discussion section itself doesn't reference this.
Right, but who would read it like that? I did a whole bunch of court-martial. I've never done that.
And Your Honor, I think what you have here is informed or advised the parties to look, and the defense counsel supplied the specification without objection.
Right, but if the military judge says one thing, go do this, I mean, I know in this case it was a civilian defense counsel, but isn't the defense counsel going to do what the military judge tells him or her to do? I just don't get the whole thing here at the end, where they're messing around with this specification, and the defense counsel is providing the specification for an offense that he's pleading not guilty to. That makes as much sense as two left shoes.
Well, Your Honor, I think the military judge was doing what he's been charged to do, which was try to clarify the record. And so
he didn't do that at all. I mean, it could be me. I will admit, it could be me. But I don't see this as an effort to clarify the record at all.
Well, he says, defense counsel, in accordance with RCM 910, I provided this court a specification under Article 128, and I want to make the record clear. That is what the specification of lesser-included offense would look like. Have you had an opportunity to review what I'm going to mark as appellate exhibit, and then the appellate exhibit in which the specification defense drafted?
Okay, well, if that's the case, why didn't he find the accused guilty? Or why wasn't the accused found guilty by exceptions then?
Well, I think that is a question that arises in this case, but ultimately I don't think it matters given that the specification itself was admitted as an appellate exhibit.
No, it wasn't, but the specification before the court. I mean, when the specification before the court had guilty findings entered onto it, wasn't he found guilty of the vulva?
I think you can look to United States v. True for an answer to this. In True, the military judge can clarify an ambiguity. This court found an ambiguity in a finding, In that case, the military judge did it after announcement, so it was less than formal. Mm-hmm. Here you have the military judge stating specifically on the record, I want to clarify for the record, this is the specification we're litigating.
Where did the judge use those words? Where did the judge say, this is the specification, and like the judge before me in this case, who ruled that we now have a specification that has a specific object in it, where did the judge say that's that first ruling of the military judge has now been changed?
Defense counsel provided the specification. I want to make the record clear. That is what the specification would look like. Have you had an opportunity to remark? Yes. Do you agree that's what the lesser included specification would look like, or is, should I say? Yes, Your Honor. Both parties agree.
This is in the context of 910. Whatever bearing that may have had on what the parties were talking about now has no bearing on this case, does it? Were they ever in a situation that arises under 910? They may have been considering what would happen conditionally if a plea were entered, but no guilty plea was ever entered in this case.
I think it's clear from the record that the way the military judge interpreted the discussion section of RCM 910A1 is that when you plea to a lesser included offense, whether guilty or not guilty, it's incumbent on the parties to specify what the lesser included offense would look like. And military judges have been charged to clarify such ambiguities, like in True, when this court said should have made a clear statement on the record as to what the lesser included offense would look like. I think in True it was actually an LIO of assault consummated by a battery that was at issue. So here the military judge did everything he could, including getting both parties' acquiescence, have a specification drafted by defense counsel, and put it on the record as an appellate exhibit.
Right, but why wasn't the government tasked to do this? I mean, it's their case.
I don't know, Your Honor, but given the language used by the military judge, the way he summarized the 802, defense counsel was free to object, and that didn't happen. Instead, you had the defense counsel come with a specification that he drafted, and the military judge ensured that both parties acquiesced to the change.
Well, our 802 session, As I understand it, doesn't provide the authority to do anything.
Well, that's why
that the only aspect of an 802 that has any pertinence, unless something goes wrong within it that now becomes the subject of litigation, is whatever is put on the record. So all we have here is a discussion of a rule that involves guilty pleas, and what gives us any confidence that the defense counsel was doing no more than responding to some emanations of what happened in an 802 session about the possibility of a guilty plea?
I think the questions by the military judge on the record, not only did he summarize the 802, he asked if anybody had any changes to the 802, and then he asked, do you agree that that's what the lesser included specification will look like or is, should I say?
Can I ask you a question because I'm confused?
Yes, Your Honor.
We have a CMO-CMR.
Yes.
Right? And the only thing that it has a finding of guilty to is specification 2 of charge 2, correct?
I think it's a lesser included offense of assault consummated by a battery, Your Honor.
Right. Assault consummated by a battery.
Yes.
The language in the official document of the trial still talks about touching the vulva with his penis.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that what he was found guilty of?
No, I think based on what you have, the military judge putting in the appellate exhibit, making sure that...
But what I have here is the official record of what the judge and the convening authority approved.
And Your Honor, I think AFCA resolved that as pointing it out, this is an error in the CMO. And I think what you have is when you see the way that
the whole issue is about the vulva versus the pelvic region, why isn't it significant?
In the CMO, Your Honor?
Yeah.
I think that it's an administrative document after trial, whereas the military judge put on the record at trial what occurred. And I think ultimately what you have is the parties...
Wait a minute. Now I'm totally confused.
Counsel,
the CMO is the official evidence of what happened.
Yes.
It's signed by the convening authority. If the CMO is wrong... whatever the military judge said at trial, that isn't going to cut the mustard. If the CMO is wrong, who's minding the store here?
Well, Your Honor, I think CMOs are routinely sent back for correction. And
right, and I don't see any corrections here.
Because AFCA in this case found factually what occurred in this case, and they ordered the CMO.
So they left it up to the Court of Criminal Appeals to clean up the mess.
Well, I think that an administrative error in a CMO is routinely corrected and sent back for correction. Ultimately, AFCA in this case, with fact-finding authority, found what had occurred in this case was the
defense.
Did
it send it back for correction?
AFCA has, sir, yes, but the case was granted here, so the CMO is yet to be corrected, is my understanding. And it's been a while since I looked at the CMO correction. I hope I'm not misstating it, Your Honor. But ultimately what you have is you have AFCA who engaged in fact-finding to determine their intent. Now, the question of major or minor change is a legal question, but I think what
I wasn't asking that.
What actually...
What he was convicted of.
Yes, and our contention is that he's convicted of pelvic region, not
of
vulva.
Of pelvic region, not vulva,
yes.
Even though the CMO says vulva.
That's correct.
And in your view, that's based on this kind of odd notion of reading the discussion of the rule and attributing that to the military judge's understanding?
Your Honor, my understanding that is the AFCA's fact-finding that what happened in this case was a request to change that occurred with the acquiescence of both parties. Like I said, the judge did hear what they're typically tasked to do, which is to, I think you have something here that's far from an ambiguous finding. Military judges are charged to ensure that the record is clear, and you have an appellate exhibit in which both parties acquiesced, in which it was stated on the record that this is what the specification is.
Now, in a normal instance like this, wouldn't the trial counsel simply have either exercised his own authority to make the exception in the specification before findings are entered, or something like that? And then the judge would then find by exceptions if everybody's agreed that what is indicated on the chart sheet is not what the findings will be? Isn't that what usually happens?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think here we're at the interesting aspect, like I said, where the greater offense...
It's interesting, all right.
Well, where you have the greater offense, which was dismissed, and so you have a plea to a lesser offense, which is not written on the charge sheet.
I understand that.
And so what you have already had happen was there is an appellate exhibit that had been written out and acquiesced by both parties reflecting what the specification...
Where in the record does the judge say you plead guilty or not guilty to this particular offense?
May I have a moment, Your Honor? Joint appendix at 56 is where the appellant pleads not guilty to the lesser included of assault consummated by a battery, and the military judge said, just so we're clear, pleading not guilty to the lesser included offense of assault consummated by a battery, and the defense counsel says yes.
Where does the accused plead guilty or not guilty to the offense as purported to be amended in this case?
Your Honor,
apparently amended by the defense counsel.
There isn't one, but I think what you have here is you have the plea to the assault consummated by a battery and then the change occurring after the fact. And that's why when AFCA engaged in its fact-finding, it resolved what happened here because of the appellate exhibit and because of the actions of the party.
Oh, wait a minute. So he pled to vulva and then it got changed?
Your Honor, the change occurs later in trial. I will... The military...
Now I have a horrible migraine. Counsel, I'm sorry, I was being facetious.
No.
What is the sequence here?
This is a mess. I agree.
It is indeed a mess.
Absolutely.
We can all agree on this.
If this would have been...
I like the concession.
I mean, it is. It's a mess. But the law is there. And what I mean by this is...
did he plead to?
Assault consummated by a battery, and based on the first military judge's ruling, she interpreted what was left as narrowed down to the vulva.
Okay. So he pled to vulva.
Yes.
Not guilty.
That's right.
Right.
And then what you have is, what specification are we looking at? The defense writes it up and provides it themselves. The government concurs. That's what led AFCA come to the conclusion that this was a request for a change.
So you're saying that change provided necessary notice?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. And the reason I say that is I can't fathom what circumstances the defense would provide a specification and not object to content of which they had no notice.
Was the evidence legally sufficient to support a charge of assault consummated by a battery by touching of the vulva with the penis.
That's what we had argued, yes, Your Honor. And based on the admission of appellant that he had tried to engage in sexual intercourse with the victim, he had told a friend that, and that evidence was introduced at trial.
Then why was it changed to pelvis?
The pelvic region?
Yeah, pelvic region, sorry.
I think that's our argument now. I don't know, but it was. And that's I think that's what we're left with. And
it doesn't inspire confidence when you come in and say, that's our argument now.
Well, I think...
this is like a moving target where everyone together is like working to save this specification.
Right, and I think...
And conscripting the defense into doing it by reference to a rule that doesn't apply.
I think there were significant litigation issues at trial with trying to prove vulva, and you see that in the closing argument when trial counsel argues that the appellant's flaccid penis touched her in the vaginal area, pelvic region, if you want to call it that. That's what the argument was during closing. She had stated in her 1168 that it was vaginal area. That was what was put at 32. I think there were significant litigation issues with vulva. You heard discussion.
Significant litigation issues, e.g., flaccidity, having her legs closed.
Yes, and you
which way was she lying, down or up?
Right.
Okay, those are the issues to which you're referring.
And what okay. You heard argument about that previously, and when there's a discussion of anatomical impossibility during closing, that was a general credibility attack to support the defense's theory of consent. In other words, the defense's theory was not it was anatomically impossible to touch her vulva. The defense knew they were defending against pelvic region, so that was her version allegedly changed as to how this all occurred, and so. Basically, there's no way he could have touched her vulva because her legs closed, and then the defense argued that's why it changed to vaginal area. You look at that in whole, not just 182 and 183 of the J, but the entire closing, and you'll see that that's a credibility attack. The defense's theory was consent.
But, now, Major Musselman, I hate to keep beating up on you because you're doing a good job here.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But you would agree with me, though, that in normally what would have happened here, if everything you say occurred, then when the military judge made his or her findings, there would have been an exception and a substitution, would there not? Of
yes.
Some sort. I mean, he would have had to say, well, find the accused not guilty of a greater offense, but guilty of a lesser included offense, with the exception of vulva, substituting, therefore, the words pelvic region or something to that effect. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
I think that's how it's supposed to look or work, but I would just point this court to United States v. True, in which it was less than formalistic and it was accepted as a clarification of findings. And I would say that here where you have the military judge, this isn't just a discussion between counsel and the military judge. There is an appellate exhibit in which the parties state and acquiesce. This is obviously, these legal issues are complicated, and the government would suggest that the easiest way to clean this all up is with waiver. Judge Efron, you were asking questions about the earlier motion in which the defense argued that
the CCA found that there was no waiver. They found that it was forfeited.
Yes, Your Honor. The waiver is reviewed de novo, and this court can look at it by itself. I would suggest, I think in Ahern, the lower court had resolved the legal issue, but this court relied on waiver. Your Honor,
wrong in Ahern.
What's that?
That's because they were wrong in Ahern.
I think they're wrong here, too, Your Honor. The earlier motion where the defense objected to a major change, the military judge ruled on that argument and held that it was moot by virtue of her ruling. In other words, that objection was no longer live 6 months later when we had went to trial. That objection, which was strictly to the greater offense, was held moot. It was incumbent upon trial defense counsel to object. And what you have here is them putting the substance in the specification itself.
Counsel, I appreciate your concession that this case is a mess, and I mean that sincerely. I think that's completely appropriate, and it was evident from the record. But I've got a question that flows from that. Does there come a point in a case like this where this court could perhaps wend its way through all the debris left by the trial counsel and the military judge on a path to affirmance But this court, in fact, should say, stop. We're not going to do so. This mess rises to such a level that an objective observer would have fundamental concerns about the manner in which this case was handled and the fairness to the accused.
No, Your Honor, and I say that for multiple reasons. First of all, AFCA figured out the mess. They engaged in their fact-finding power, and they laid out what occurred in the intent. The questions of law, obviously, are de novo, but AFCA's already done the heavy lifting, and their facts are not clearly erroneous. Secondly,
but they're erroneous about waiver.
Well, that's a question of law, Your Honor. So
they're right when you agree with them, and they're wrong when they don't.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Yes, yes, yes. Especially about waiver, Your Honor. So then what you have is, that's the first answer to that. The second answer is, we shouldn't lose sight here. The defense is the one that supplied the content of the specification. That's
part of what we're having such heartburn over, right? Which is, like, why were they put in that position at all by reference to a rule that's not even in play?
Well, Your Honor, my answer to that...
It says it's clearly a guilty plea provision, RCM 910. Clearly pertains to guilty pleas. It doesn't pertain to a contested case where someone is pleading not guilty. I mean, it just doesn't. And you can't possibly stand here with a straight face and say that it does.
Your Honor, what I would, to answer your question and continue to answer Judge Old's question, I would say that the lack of objection here throughout. First of all, you have no objection to lesser included offense. At a minimum, it's plain error, and we argue waiver given the affirmative actions. Appellant concedes it's plain error in his brief. And then you have the supplying of the specifications. At no point was the content ever dictated, and I think that's extremely important when you're talking about going from vulva to pelvic region. So when you have, and then on top of that, you have an appellant who was faced with being convicted of attempted sexual assault, which we know all the things that come with that, a higher maximum sentence, potential sex offender registration, and here we have them supplying a lesser included offense that may give a different theory that would not lend them to such collateral consequences. So I think those are the two answers to your question. I see I'm out of time, Your Honor, if there's no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Does the appellant have rebuttal?
Can I ask you a quick question to begin with?
Yes, Your Honor.
What precisely did the military judge state on the record he found appellant guilty of?
Of the lesser included offense, Judge, and the only conclusion.
But, I mean, what precisely did he say? I'm sorry, but.
I'm going to try to get that for you, Judge, if I can.
I'll let her look for that while you say whatever else you were going to say.
Yes, Judge.
Before you say whatever you're going to say, and I know I seem obsessed with this point, but I'm still wondering, why did the defense counsel go along with this kind of odd sequence of events near the end? I mean, the judge's reference to a rule, as Judge Ryan has indicated, which I think I agree, doesn't seem to apply. And then the defense counsel kind of going, you know, submitting this draft specification. Why is the defense counsel doing this?
Judge Sparks, if I may answer Judge Ryan's turn, my friend had a question first.
Sure.
With respect, my colleague is from the government has handed me the finding, which is of a lesser included offense, Judge Ryan, of specification 2 of charge 2, assault consummated by a battery in violation of Article 128 Uniform Code of Military Justice, guilty. So
no exceptions, no substitutions.
No exceptions, no substitutions, Judge. And we submit that just didn't happen. Judge, I can give you the speculation that, again, I submit the only reasonable reading of this record of trial is that the government's case is falling apart around them.
That might be, but I'm stuck on this one thing, and I don't want to use all your time, but I'm stuck on this one thing where the military judge asked the defense counsel to draft the specification to the lesser included offense, I agree.
Yes, Judge.
To an offense which is pleading not guilty to. I don't get it.
Yes, Judge, and I submit the only reasonable reading is it is to an aborted plea that never happens. Whatever.
But when
reason,
did that come up? When was there some discussion of it? Of a plea, like a guilty plea?
I don't know, Judge, but that's what 910 deals with. I don't know. The thing that I will agree with my colleague from the government is this case is a mess.
All right, well, I'm not going to impound this issue anymore. I understand. You can't answer the question any more than he can because the record is not developed.
That's right, Judge, but it's undeveloped and unclear because of the government's litigation strategy before the CCA. What happened at trial was clear before the litigation before the CCA. The trial counsel's recitation of the findings of fact, the CMO isn't an error. That's the charge that the convening authority referred to court-martial. And it wasn't until they were going to be held to account for factual sufficiency below, after conceding the case at trial, that they came up with this new strategy.
Your view as to whether the evidence was legally sufficient to show assault consummated by a battery by placing the penis on the vulva?
Chief Judge, my time has expired. Well, answer the judge. It's not there, Judge. The reference by the government to the Gospel of Matthew tells you that it's not there. And ultimately, because of the government's litigation strategy below, we'll never know what Captain Honey was convicted of. And that's precisely what Walters says that this court or a CCA can't review. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for both sides, having manfully striven to make something of this mess, the case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand in recess pending further order of the court.
All rise. Court is adjourned until further order of the court.